Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, Pardes alum. This week, Bahalotcha. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger returns and discusses Parsha Bahalotcha. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member at Pardes and serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week's Parsha is Parshat Bahalotcha. I would like to examine chapter 11 and perhaps chapter 12, two chapters which mark a turning point in the book of Bamidbar, where we are told of a series of sins of the Jewish people, which ultimately lead to the death of a whole generation in the desert. But today I would like to explore the personality of Moshe, the leadership of Moshe. How does Moshe handle these situations? In chapter 11, verse 1, we are told of the people who are grumbling, perhaps grumbling under their breath, mit'oninim. And I say they're grumbling under their breath because it is Rab ba'oznei Hashem, only God hears them. It would seem that this is not something which is public knowledge. Certainly Moshe is unaware of it. And God's response to the grumbling is to be angry, to send forth fire, which consumes the edge of the camp, kills people. When the people cry out to Moshe, turn to Moshe for help, Moshe's response is to pray to God and thereby bring the end of this punishment. It seems very, very straightforward. The people turn to Moshe, Moshe turns to God. Moshe is doing what needs to be done in the situation. But then we come to the next story, in verse 4. The riffraff in the midst of the Jewish people have a desire. They then impact on the general Jewish population. And all of a sudden there is an outcry. We want meat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt for free. We remember a whole variety of vegetables that we had there. We are parched. We are dry. All that we have is the manna. And when we move to verse 10, Moshe hears the people crying according to their families. A man at the entrance to his tent. God becomes angry, very angry. And the eyes of Moshe, it is evil. The people are no longer grumbling under their breath. The people are openly crying out, making a whole scene, crying out for the fulfillment of their desires. It is public. Moshe sees it. Moshe hears it. And we're told in the eyes of Moshe it is evil. In verse 11, Moshe turns to God. It is very, very striking. Moshe does not turn to the people, does not rebuke them. Moshe does not attempt to stop the complaining. Instead, what Moshe does is to turn to God. And Moshe says, "Why have you done evil to your servant? Why have I not found favor in your eyes, that you have placed the burden of this whole nation upon me?" In verse 12, "Was I pregnant with this nation? Did I bear this nation? That you should say to me, 'Carry them in your bosom,' as a nursemaid carries its suckling, on the land that you have sworn to their fathers." When we look at Moshe's response, the image that we have is Moshe who is throwing up his hands, an image of total frustration. We could perhaps say in modern terms, he's overwhelmed, burned out. He just doesn't know how to handle the people. When Moshe starts and saying, "Why have you done evil to your servant?" it echoes what Moshe said when he first came to Pharaoh, which resulted in a fiasco. When the policemen of Israel turned to him and say, "What have you done? May God judge you that you have placed a sword in the hand of Pharaoh." And Moshe at that time says to God, "Why have you done evilly to this people? Why have you sent me?" And both of these echo what Moshe said to God originally at the burning bush in chapter 3 in Exodus. When God tells him of the mission he has to undertake, Moshe says, who am I to go to Pharaoh? Who am I to take the Jewish people out of the land of Egypt? Moshe has been through a lot with the Jewish people. There have been many ups and downs. Bringing the Jewish people out of Egypt was a difficult task. In the aftermath of the Red Sea, in chapter 15, chapter 16, chapter 17 in Exodus, we see how the people are grumbling as they begin their journey in the desert. There are many rough edges. When the people come to Sinai, it seems that there's been a dramatic shift. The people enter into a covenantal relationship with God, and then everything falls apart with the golden calf. And at the golden calf, that's when Moshe comes into his own as the leader of the people, where Moshe is able to, on the one hand, defend them before God, plead their case, achieve forgiveness, to be able to bring them a second set of tablets, and at the same time, to be the person who lays the law down by breaking the tablets, by burning the calf, by killing 3,000 men from among the Jewish people. It is clear to the people who is in charge, who is the authority. And it seems that in the aftermath of the golden calf, when Moshe is given the instructions and then ultimately executes the construction of the tabernacle, when the presence of God is brought back into the midst of the Jewish people, and then when we shift to the beginning of Numbers, when Moshe is given the task of counting the people, organizing them, getting them ready to the last detail to enter the land of Israel, it seems that Moshe has finally come into his own, to being their leader, to be able to get them to actualize their destiny. And then all of a sudden, in our chapter, it falls apart. Moshe complains bitterly to God, as if God is asking him to do the impossible. When Moshe says, in the verse I just read, in verse 12, chapter 11, verse 12, was I pregnant with his people? Did I bear them? That you should tell me, be like a nursemaid. Moshe, in effect, is saying to God, to be a leader of the Jewish people requires infinite patience, something which he does not have, and perhaps something which is inappropriate to expect of him. It's as if Moshe is now throwing the ball into God's court. And when Moshe continues and says in verse 13, where can I give them meat to fulfill their desires? I cannot do it alone in verse 14. It's too heavy. Kill me rather than have me see my demise. The simple way of taking the text is that Moshe throws up his hands and is basically saying to God, I can't do it. I can't do it alone. It's too much. And when we read the continuation, God's response is, so here, I am giving you 70 elders who will help you. This once again echoes what happened earlier, much earlier, at the burning bush. When Moshe said, who am I to lead the Jewish people? Who am I to go to Pharaoh? And there too God said to him, go gather the elders of the Jewish people. They will be your support system. Parenthetically, it's worth noting that when in fact Moshe actually comes before Pharaoh, the elders are not with him. Ironically, Moshe needs to go it alone, although he does have Aaron to assist him. This time, though, it seems that the 70 elders are there with him, so that finally Moshe is in a position where he does not need to bear the burden, the unbearable burden, all alone. I would like to add another take on what Moshe says to God, which gives it a slightly different spin. And that is that Moshe is not at the point of utter desperation, utter frustration, throwing up his hands and saying, I can't do it anymore. But that this is actually a tactic that Moshe is using to deflect God's anger from the Jewish people to Moshe. rather than casting the blame on the Jewish people. Moshe says, it's my fault. And to a certain extent, God's fault. Because God has created a situation which is untenable. It is inconceivable that Moshe should be the sole leader of the Jewish people. By Moshe highlighting the impossible nature of his task, he somehow defends the Jewish people. As a way of saying, the problem here is not with the Jewish people, the problem is with Moshe. When God says to Moshe, I will give you 70 elders, ostensibly, God is responding to Moshe. God is also on two levels. On one level, God is saying, you do not need to bear it alone. You will have help. The role of the elders is to somehow be able to speak to the people, to be like the nursemaid who soothes them. On another level, by giving him the elders, God is reflecting a certain understanding, empathy for the Jewish people. The Jewish people are not there yet. They still need some help, people that they can turn to. Note, in chapter 11, verse 16 and 17, God says to Moshe, you will take these 70 elders, whom you know to be the elders of the people, and their policemen. And the commentaries note, why emphasize the policemen? Because as we know in chapter 5 in Exodus, the policemen were the ones who were beaten when the Jews did not fulfill the quota, who rather than beat the Jews, took the rap. And therefore they are the people who perhaps have that empathy for the people, who in the end can understand their murmurings, be sympathetic to them, and perhaps educate them towards a different model. Moshe is to take these people, bring them to the tent of meeting. They are to stand with him. And God says in the next verse, and I will come down and speak to you there, and take from the spirit which is upon you, place it upon them. Why? Why do it this way? And the simplest way of understanding this is God wants it to be perfectly clear that the 70 elders are an extension of Moses rather than a replacement. Rashi, on his commentary, says, to what is this analogous? This is analogous to a candle which is used to light other candles. The original candle is not diminished by it. The goal over here is to show the people that rather than have Moshe diminished by what's just happened, Moshe somehow expanded. Moshe now has 70 arms to help him deal with the people. As it says in the continuation of verse 17, they will bear with you the burden of the people, and you will not be alone. Let's look at the continuation. God then says to Moshe, as to the request of the people, God will bring them meat. Bring them meat to the point where they are sick of it. It will come out of their noses. They will detest it. Some people would say gross out from what they're eating. And then look at Moshe's response in verse 21. Moshe says, this people in whose midst I am are 600,000. And you want to give them meat and have them eat it for a month? Can you slaughter the sheep and the cattle and have it satisfy them? And if you take all the fish of the sea and gather it, will it be enough for them? These verses are very, very strange. And there's a disagreement among the rabbis of the Mishnah as to how to understand it. And Rashi quotes three opinions. First, there is Rabbi Akiva, who says you should understand this literally, that Moshe was saying to God, where are you going to get the meat to feed these people? And in fact, according to the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, it seems that there's a lack of faith over here on the part of Moshe. A lack of faith which actually should have been punished. But since it was expressed privately, God ignored. If we take the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, then perhaps we can say that when Moshe earlier said to God, "What have you done to me?" and we spoke about Moshe throwing up his hands, totally disillusioned, then this would perhaps be an extension of that. Even after God says to him, "I am giving you the 70 elders who will help you," but the moment God says that he's going to bring them all this meat, once again, the frustration, the disillusionment comes to the fore. How can you do it? It's impossible. In the same way that Moshe is overwhelmed by the behavior of the Jewish people, Moshe can't fathom how God will be able to provide for them. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai says, "How could you possibly say such a thing, Rabbi Akiva? Could you imagine that Moshe would have this lack of faith?" So Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai interprets it differently and basically says, "What's the point of this? Here you are. You're giving them all this meat. Towards what end? So that they should die?" And to quote one line from Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, "V'chi shivchacha huze? Is this your praise?" And perhaps we can see Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai fitting in with the explanation I said earlier, that if Moshe is somehow trying to defend the Jewish people, deflect God's anger from them to him, and to basically say, "It's my problem, not theirs." So once again, here is Moshe defending the Jewish people and saying, "What's the point of stuffing them till they die? Is that your glory? To just make a point?" Rashi actually brings a third opinion, Rami Gamliel, who says also that Moshe is saying to God, "What's the point of giving them all this meat?" but comes at it from a different angle, saying that if you give them all this meat, that's not really the issue. That's not really what they want. That's not really dealing with the problem. And perhaps we could say that Rami Gamliel also might be using this as a way of saying that Moshe is frustrated with the Jewish people. It's too overwhelming. Too overwhelming because what they're asking for goes far beyond the question of the meat. So what's the point of doing this? And I'd like to note that all of this is happening after God has said to him, "I'll give you the 70 elders." But one could then make the point and say, how will the elders help me? How will giving them meat help? Because in the end, there's a problem which is much more deeply rooted. This general discontent. And God's response to Moshe is, so what's the alternative? To not do anything? And it's very interesting that Moshe then goes, speaks to the people, gathers the 70 elders. The cloud comes down, which means that at a certain point, Moshe, who was so involved in talking to God, eventually has to go and speak to the people. And it would seem that by Moshe speaking to the people on the one hand, by taking the 70 elders on the other hand, that perhaps Moshe is now taking a situation which was rapidly deteriorating and trying to put it into some sort of control. And then all of a sudden we're told of two men who are in the camp who begin prophesying. Important to note, according to the rabbis, these two men should have been among the elders, the 70 elders, but opted out out of modesty. And it seems that right now they are prophesying independently of Moshe. If the elders earlier were the extension of Moshe, were the corrective that would enable Moshe to go on and play his role, the two men who are prophesying now in the camp are perhaps undermining Moshe. Add to that a rabbinic comment in the Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin, which says that when the two people are prophesying, the content of their prophecy, Moshe will die, Joshua will bring the people into the land. And in verse 28, we see Joshua's response. He's outraged. "My master Moshe, lock them up." Joshua sees that what is going on now with these two men is signaling the beginning of the end of Moshe, is creating a serious breakdown in his authority, in his leadership. And Moshe's response to Joshua is, "Do not be jealous for me. Would that all of God's people be prophets." Although Moshe says that, and in truth, is the humblest of people, and is not looking for the power, for the glamour. In fact, what is happening with these two men prophesying is that we are now in the process of the beginning of the end of Moshe's leadership. Somehow this story began the breach, and the 70 men who were supposed to reinforce Moshe perhaps will now reflect the idea of Moshe beginning to fade into the background as others take over. When we read the next story in chapter 12 of Miriam and Aaron, who challenge Moshe by speaking about the Cushite woman that he took, although the rabbis understand that their speaking about it was an attempt to correct what they saw as being a problematic situation, by speaking against Moshe, even if it wasn't done publicly, they are banging a further nail in his coffin. They are chipping away at his leadership. And in next week's parsha, in the story of the spies, Moshe's leadership totally falls apart. The spies take over, which ultimately leads to having a whole generation die in the desert. From our parsha, as I said, it is the beginning of the end of Moshe's rule, which ultimately is then taken to its extreme in chapter 20, when God says that Moshe will die in the desert, and subsequently in chapter 27, when Moshe is told of who his successor will be, Joshua. In many ways, Moshe is a tragic figure. He was thrust into a role which he didn't want. He felt inadequate. He did everything to try to run away from that. At a certain point, with his back against the wall, Moshe carried out his role to the best of his ability. To his success, he brought the Jewish people out of Egypt, brought them through the Red Sea, brought about the revelation at Sinai, and in the eyes of the people, became a semi-divine God figure. He reinstated their relationship with God in the aftermath of the golden calf, and was instrumental in having God's presence be with them on a constant basis through the tabernacle. And yet, as Moshe himself said, the burden is too great. The burden which was so great was the need to be a nursemaid, to somehow be able to speak to the people, to calm them, to soothe them, to pacify them. Moshe the lawgiver, Moshe the man of truth, Moshe the one who is prepared to fight for his principles, the one who is prepared to defend the Jewish people before God, finds it very difficult to be a nursing mother, to deal with a whining child, one could say with millions of whining children. Perhaps the expectation was impossible. And Moshe in the end, tragically, does not bring his mission to a successful conclusion, but needs to hand over the reins to someone else. The difficulty of the Jewish people becomes the difficulty of Moshe. Something for us to think about as teachers, as leaders, as parents. Sometimes we face very, very difficult situations, perhaps deal with people who are very irrational. It takes infinite patience, empathy, to be able to go on. Perhaps this is what we need to learn from Moshe, to not throw up our arms, to not be overwhelmed, but to just continue on. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send an email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.